Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Buck Sexton Show. In this episode, our friend Kurt Schlichter is making an appearance, which is very exciting. He is a lawyer, a veteran, an author, a columnist at townhall.com, and just general ass kicker and patriotic American. Kurt, great to have you on, sir. Thanks for coming to hang out.
Well, Buck, you forgot sexual powerhouse.
I mean, you did tell me that at some point your wife is going to bring you a bottle of wine, so I figured we would have the, you know, the life advice for the gentleman out there once we had, you know, once you had a couple glasses of wine. Mrs. Schlichter could tell everybody, you know, how the alpha dogs actually roll. I'm just saying. That's what I've heard.
Well, you've seen her. You know how hot she is. You and I, like, share this. We just will not tolerate women who aren't of a certain standard.
Well, I will tell you that I have we have a mutual friend who I don't want to, I don't know if I have permission to give away his secrets, but you and I have a mutual friend, you probably know who it is just from me saying this, who has a theory that you basically can't trust a guy who doesn't have a hot wife. Now, as long as the guy thinks his wife is hot, that counts, right? It's all about you can't trust a guy who doesn't have a hot wife, or who doesn't believe he has a hot wife. That's his theory. I always think that's an interesting case study.
Why would you? Why would you settle for anything less than the best? You're a man, damn it. You're a man.
There you go.
Embrace it.
So we could get into dating advice for the younger male portion of the audience later on the program. Like I said, Kurt asked me, he's like, can I smoke? Can I drink a cigar? That would be crazy. Can I smoke a cigar? Can I drink some scotch during this? And I was like, Kurt, you roll however you want, buddy. This is Kurt's world. We're just trying to film it. And we'll get into some of that stuff. Can I ask you about some real stuff though for a second first? Because like there are a lot of people come here that we want to have news content analysis. You're a very smart man. You come from the old school Cold War era, thump it out with the bad guys with tanks. We're talking order of battle stuff. We're talking about how many, you know, millions of rounds and hundreds and thousands of gallons of fuel. And, you know, massive formations to fight the Soviet beast. So, you know, you're not one of these fancy counterinsurgency guys. Oh, I speak multiple languages of the natives and I read books and sit around and try to win the hearts and minds. You're like, boom, we're dropping bombs on you.
When they sent me to Kosovo after 9/11, which, you know, was a lot like a fireman instead of getting to put out the fire at the orphanage of the old folks, only gets the cat out of the tree. When I was at Kosovo, I was helping people, you know, start mushroom farms. It was not slam bang, but I started out in the Cold War. I started out in Germany. I was part of NATO. I went to the Gulf War as part of 7th Corps. I ended up at 7th Corps headquarters. I ran a heavily armed car wash at that time. After that, got out, went in the reserves, immediately went mechanized infantry. Which is, and of course, being the new lieutenant, I got to be the vehicle guy. I got to be the battalion motor officer for a heavy battalion. That was just a delight because they break all the time.
How prepared are we for the possibility of a war with a country like either Russia or China where they have very large things that can go bang too? You know what I mean? You know, we've been fighting... We've been fighting wars for 20 years where we have absolute uncontested air superiority from day one, right?
We have absolute
Americans have not been under air attacks since Korea.
Right. Absolute technological superiority. You know, in most cases, even our guys in Afghanistan, Iraq had, you know, night vision goggles. Some of the, you know, we can get into like some of the Haqqani network guys and everything would have. But generally speaking, you know, we had much better technology. Are we ready? If we had to go, you know, Abrams tank muzzle to muzzle with Russian tank formations, are we ready for this? I mean, just to get an understanding of where we stand right now with military readiness for the wars we may be fighting.
I'm not as worried about crew-to-crew fighting as I am about high-level leadership. Leadership cures a host of illnesses. It is the solution to many, many problems. And we don't have it right now, Buck. We have a military that has not won a war unequivocally in 30 years. We have a military that is very concerned with nonsense. You know, I was talking to another guy who was associated with war colleges, and he was telling me that he would, you know, sit in briefings and, you know, basic exercises, a bunch of colonels on Saturday will brief you on what America's greatest strategic challenge is. Then Sunday, they'll brief you on what the solution is. You know, basic 101 war college-y stuff. Half the people will show up and say our number one strategic challenge is climate change. Okay, no. Our number one strategic challenge is Chinese trying to kill us. I am not confident in our military leadership today. I think we have dropped our standards, taken our eyes off the ball, lost our focus. I think if we get into a high-intensity conventional conflict against a peer competitor, and I don't think the Russians are truly a peer competitor at this point, though after they rebuild their shattered army, they probably will be. I think we're going to find ourselves outgunned and outfought. I think we've milked our past experience, particularly in the Navy. You know, we were the only military, maybe the British, the only Navy that had done massive worldwide combat operations. We did that in World War II. We lived off that legacy. I know my family's all Navy. I'm the green sheep. And we lived off that for years. And that's just gone now. Our ships are running into each other. The officer corps is a disaster. There's no real focus on combat readiness. Soldiers do what commanders check. Commanders are checking wokeness, so you get wokeness. And it's a disaster. And if we get into a fight, we're going to lose people.
Well, yeah, this, I mean, my concern isn't, you know, we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan excellence at the warfighter level continuously. Yeah. But with the idea of a war, a conventional developed world conflict now, right? I brought up things like ammunition, gasoline, because that's what actually matters. Who brings more guns that they can keep in the field, that they can fire accurately and feed with ammo and, you know, all that component of it, which is not, you know, really what we were doing in these other places. I mean, I was reading about 6 months ago, I think it was maybe a little more than that. We were worried that our ability to provide munitions to Ukraine was outstripping our ability to make them. And that's for a war we're not even in.
Look, the United States has won war since the Civil War. With two things. First of all, our troops are generally excellent. They're generally pretty good. You might be able to say at the British Army, maybe the German Army, man for man, were better trained, had more focused professional military traditions. But the American soldiers are pretty damn good. But you put pretty damn good with endless artillery rounds. You know, the Germans would fight the Americans, and they'd be tactically very proficient. But every time they shot at Americans, they just get pummeled by 155s. They just get blown to bits. And you can't fight that. We win because we mastered logistics. We deliver steel on target. And steel on target is not just pulling the cord on a can. It's building the shell, moving the shell. I remember in the Gulf, I was at 7th Corps, Maine, which was vicinity of Hafr al-Batin. It's right off what's called Tapline Road, big road running over the north. And I was going back towards the town down in through a wadi, which is a big valley completely empty. Nothing but rocks and the occasional Euromastic lizard. 3 days later, I drove through that same valley. For as far as the eye can see was American military material. We moved a city of 500,000 men from America and Europe to the ports and then out into the middle of the desert, and then we fought it, moving. That is a logistic achievement, Desert Storm, that frankly, we've never, I can't think of another military that's mastered it.
I mean,
and I think the victory in Desert Storm was probably the height of America's undisputed power, but it was a power of logistics.
Right. Well, then what I was going to say, I mean, by the way, there's, you know, How to Make War, the book by William Morrow, which is now in, you know, multiple editions, a good basis for or basics for people to get a sense of how to make war, what it actually entails. And it is so much an overview. Yeah. Strategy. Strategy is sexy, right? You know, Sun Tzu, and talk about all the Clausewitz and you talk about all these different, you know, people from history that makes everyone sound fancy. And look, there's a lot of insight and interesting stuff from that. But you really want to understand how people win wars. You look at the greatest military powers in history, all had superior logistics. I mean, this was true of, even though people don't think of it this way, the Mongolians were amazing.
Yes.
At siege warfare, which required, you know, enormous building and construction and coordination. I mean, you know, as well as moving and feeding 80,000 men, or, you know, whatever the size of the military was that we're talking about, on horseback. Obviously, the Germans moving guns that are like bigger than any guns we even see now for the First World War. They're doing it with some of it on trains, but a lot of it with horseback. Obviously, the British Navy. I mean, you look at
most of the army that Wehrmacht that invaded Poland was horse drawn.
Yeah.
It was not mech.
Yeah.
You hear about the Panzers, but a ton of it was horse-drawn.
I mean, even when the Ottomans were at their peak, too, what the Ottomans could do, the reason the Ottomans were the preeminent Western world military power for certainly a few hundred years was they could bring more men into the field, feed them with better materiel, better training, and better logistic support for them than anybody else by far. Like no one else even close to being able. Now, you know, a lot of that was the logistics of, or the advantage of having Constantinople, which is the single probably most advantageous real estate you could have had in the entire, certainly entire Mediterranean world. But
and of course, it was the Romans who really built that up. And of course, you can go walk on a Roman road today.
Yeah.
And it's better than most roads in our third world cities in blue America.
And this is why, you know, as I look again now at the future and what we'll be able to do, look, our economic preeminence is really what drives our military preeminence, certainly in a conventional conflict. And I see what's happening in Ukraine, and I wanted to switch and get your sense of where we are in we're going to talk strategy now. We've been talking logistics, talking strategy here. Here's where I think the right tends to be on this, and not including Lindsey Graham, who's just like blow it out of the sky with the Russian planes. I mean, I don't understand how the Republican base. I want to meet these South Carolina Republican, you know, rock solid Republican voters who are like, Lindsey Graham is my guy. I guess it's just habit. But I sit here and I go, what are you know? Anyway,
I digress. These red states get soft because they don't have to fight. You know, Republicans in California are pretty hard because we're on our back foot all the time. But you get to like Texas, and if you want to get elected to something, you got to be a Republican. So you get a lot of soft Republicans who should be Democrats in a normal state coming in. And then there are things like, well, you know, we can't really stop groomers. Oh, well, school choice is terrible. Oh, well, I ain't gonna be started.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking it's interesting, you know, you could argue like three of the great, and great, I don't mean like good people, but most impactful, although I hate that word. It's not really the way it should be used.
Impactful. It's not even a word.
It's not even a word, but people use it all the time. I think it probably is considered a word now, but then again, so is like, you know, there's all these things that they're changing all the time.
Yes.
You look at Napoleon, sort of the greatest French nationalist of all time from Corsica, which is like,
I know, right?
Not really France. Like, come.
French warriors were a delusional teenage girl and a Corsican dwarf.
you know, he went back and forth between Italy and France, right? So it's like, is it really France? Eh. You had Joseph Stalin, who came from Georgia, which was on the frontier of the Russian Empire at the time, right? And you have Hitler, as much as everyone thinks of Hitler as being German, Hitler was Austrian, which
again, was Austrian
from the sort of frontier and you know the nationalist, ultra nationalist sentiments that came from some of these individuals and the way that they. I just think it's interesting because you know they grew up in places where there was that friction of empire and holding
that's
all
a good
together.
Point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I mean, you look at somebody like Trajan, and he was, I believe, he was Spanish. He was born in Spain. Hold on, I'm gonna get, honey. I'm gonna need you to get the pizza.
This is fine. This is what we expect on this. See, on the radio show, we're on the clock, man. It's every. We got sponsors. We got to get to. You know, here you could get the pizza. What do we get on this pizza, by the way? Are we talking pepperoni? What do we get on this one?
Oh, I got pepperoni, sausage, bell pepper, and onions. Excuse me. Honey, get the pizza!
This is very much like Will Ferrell in Wedding Crashers, when he's like, Mom,
like
the meatloaf!
I'm going to go get the pizza. Give me a minute.
Yeah, go ahead and get the pizza. That's not a problem. In the meantime, I'm actually going to do a read for one of our fantastic sponsors. The recent bank failures are the nation's largest collapse of a financial institution since 2008. If you've been on the fence about buying gold and silver, now is the time to make the call. Gold and silver can be a protection for your portfolio, but can also be used as currency, and who knows when we're going to really need that. Why not have a little gold and silver on hand just in case? Protect your portfolio now. It is the time to call the Oxford Gold Group. Just hear what they have to say. The phone call is free. Securing your IRA or 401k with real gold and silver is a portfolio protection plan, and Oxford Gold has made it as easy as 1, 2, 3. One call, and you can pick your precious metals. That's right. The real precious metals, just like I have here at home. Oxford Gold Group hooks you up. Gold and silver. I've got mine right here. Got it next to my ammunition and my firearms. Just putting that out there. Keep important protected things close to each other. Call the Oxford Gold Group about your possibility to get gold and silver today. You can also get additional free bonus opportunities. Ooh, that sounds interesting. 833-404-GOLD. 833-404-G-O-L-D. Kurt Schlichter is back, and he has his pizza now in hand, which is exciting, or at least at hand.
I love how you just swing right into a read.
Yeah, of course.
Which is when I guest post for folks, it's the part I hate the most.
But I'm a pro, man. That's you gotta use your space and the time you got. No dead air, even on the podcast. That's how we roll. By the way, I heard a dog.
Not getting this pizza because
I heard a
look. Here's how.
Wait! I got a question. I heard a dog in the background. Do you have a dog? What do you have?
There's two of them.
What do you have?
I have a rat-like terrier and kind of like a little corgi.
Okay. I mean, it's funny. I'm looking at houses with the wife. You know, we want to actually get a house, you know, try to start a family, that kind of stuff. And because I've lived in just like tiny apartments my whole life, very bachelor style.
Yes.
You know, at one point, my very small studio apartment in New York was described by a young woman as looking like something that was a shrine to like my time in the CIA and a sword collection. And I was like, what guy in his early 30s who lives alone doesn't have a bunch of weapons on the wall? Anyway, neither here nor there.
I got a sword right up there.
See?
For my cavalry squadron.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't I have a saber handy? I'm not telling you what's in some of these drawers around me.
Yeah, but I will say that she laughs at me because we go see houses. I always want to see the books of the person who lives there, like what books they have. And I just feel I look at the books and I get a sense. I'm like, of who lives here right away. Every time. First of all, I know Democrat or Republican, and she thinks it's really funny. I mean, I've seen your books. We're going to talk about Inferno and your, you know, you're an author. My man here is an author who writes thrillers. Is that what we would describe them as?
I write the People's Republic was the first of the novels, and it's back there. And I decided I was bored. right? I'm bored reading these novels. They seem very cookie cutter. I want to write something that's action packed, funny, and talked about what was going on. So I imagine a world where America has a great divorce. Half of it's red, half of it's blue. And a guy from the red has to go into blue America to do missions with guns. And he carries a Wilson Combat 45, which got me to meet Bill Wilson eventually, who's just a badass gunmaker. And then people buy this thing and they enjoyed it. It's, you know, I'm a funny guy. I'm the only 06 I know who was ever a stand-up comic. I know how to write a joke. And they're funny and action-packed and interesting. So I write a second one and a third one. I'm writing number 8 now, okay? Inferno is number 7. It's out. And they're so much fun to read. And they're so much fun to write. And I've sold a ton of these things. They'll be in the top 100 of Amazon. And this is just, I mean, this is just, you know, a great use of technology. Because while I do nonfiction for Regnery, with these, I don't have to go and ask anybody if they want to publish it. I can publish it. And I sell it on Amazon. And it's professional quality. And it's, you know, people love these things. And it's finally making some conservative culture.
Well, and this is the thing. This is the thing that we have to do. I've been saying for a while. Yeah. And I know, you know, others say this too, but I think it's, it needs amplification, right? That, you know, you think about Tom Wolfe, who I think people would put as a conservative or certainly a more traditionalist author, Bonfire, yeah. The Vanities. You yep. can read Bonfire, The Vanities, which is a great novel. I've actually got it right over here on my bookshelf, which people can't see, but, you know, I don't have my credibility shelf behind me. It's in front of me right now, but it's still there. I just want everyone to know I'm not, you know, I'm just calling it out. It's still there. Bonfire of the Vanities, great book. Terrible movie, so don't ever watch the movie. Tom Hanks, not Goldie Hawn. Who was in it? Tom Hanks and Bruce Willis is in it. I was trying to remember who the female lead was, but anyway, not a good movie.
I don't
movie.
Remember either.
Yeah, the book is excellent, though.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But you can read that book and you understand that we just sort of go through cycles here with Democrat urban politics and the way the city machinery works and the way that the newspapers and the narrative and racial politics and all this stuff comes together. We need more people creating things in that space. And I say this as somebody who does like traditional news talk radio every day. Obviously I think I have a particular take on it, or I've, you know, been good at it. So I love what I do. But I do want to actually do some of that other stuff. I mean, if I had my druthers, I'll just tell you this, right? Can we nerd out together here for a second? Just you, me, and
let's nerd,
you know, there's going to be like hundreds of thousands of people when all said and done, are going to listen to this at least watching. We need more people to watch. So if you're listening to this, please subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Cause Kurt and I are handsome guys.
Really cool shirt.
He's wearing a cool shirt. If more of you click subscribe at youtube.com/BuckSexton, Kurt will go down 3 buttons. We're talking 3 buttons down. That's a little bit of man cleavage you're going to get there.
Get a little hair going.
Oh, wow. And
unleash my inner Ernest Borgnine.
Who is that?
You know who Ernest Borgnine is?
No.
You know who Ernest Borgnine is.
I don't know. Anyway, well.
If you need to Google Ernest Borgnine, you're going to go. Ernest Borgnine, of course.
Of course. I was thinking Serge from Beverly Hills Cop, but anyway. So I don't know if you remember Bronson Pinchot.
I do remember Bronson Pinchot.
Okay.
I also was good friends with the sister of Lisa Eilbacher, who was in that. She was a stand-up comic, and she would never tell her real name. but we figured it out.
Oh, good deal. You're also in L.A. I will say I'm a New York conservative, even though I've moved to Miami to join the Florida Revolution. So and I love it here, by the way. And I don't know what to say. It's awesome. Like I just went on. I went and picked up an AR-15 recently, and Daniel Defense, you'd be very proud. It's very, very excellent. I also got a Staccato C2. We can talk about this another. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Papa Buck doesn't mess around. You know what I mean? If I'm getting firearms,
nice. Can't get those in Cali.
Yeah, it's like the Lamborghini of firearms. Like, I'm not playing games over here.
Nice gun.
But I walked out of the gun store, and I know this is going to sound crazy to the people listening who are from, like, normal red states, read the Second Amendment. There was a part of me that kept thinking, like, I'm going to get arrested. Because in New York...
If you walk out
of a gun store with an AR-15, like, that means somebody sold you something in the back they weren't supposed to, and, like, you're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, here comes the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, I've got an out-of-state concealed license. I was in Texas, where it applies. And, of course, in California, I was only a guy in charge of thousands of guys carrying automatic rifles on the streets of Los Angeles as a battalion commander during civil operations. But I can't be trusted with a concealed carry permit. No, some GS3 has to decide for the colonel whether or not I should be armed. So I had a gun. I was carrying it, and it felt very weird. I carry guns a lot, but you have to recock your mind when you're doing it. You can't be a loudmouth. You can't drink a lot. You got to behave yourself. And it was, you know, normally, you know, gun free. I can be in as big an idiot as I want. Suddenly you got that Glock, and suddenly it's like, I better make sure I don't do anything stupid.
It is remarkable. I mean, I remember even when I was sent by the federal government to the NYPD to help in the Intel division, the CIA, the federal government, had trained me to use firearms. And I asked, I was like, so is there any way, like, can I get a permit here as you know, a civilian, essentially, you know, and they were like, no. I was like, wait, but I mean, I don't understand. Like, I have the Second Amendment and I've been trained and you guys knew I have a top secret clearance. And they're just like, yeah, we don't. That means nothing.
Yeah, none of that matters.
Yeah. You know, the gang members, they get to have the guns. And if arrested with them in New York, at least now, and a lot of other Democrat precincts. You've noticed there's a fascinating, I like to tell everybody about this, Kurt. I'm sure you've noticed this. There is a fascinating reality of firearms law enforcing laws around firearms, where they're always talking about how we have to crack down on guns, more background checks, ban AR-15s, you know, all this stuff, right? Biden's still talking about it, you know, this week.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about this stuff all the time.
Wow.
You know that they basically don't prosecute gang members for a first offense with guns in Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles. I mean, good on the list. So if you have a handgun that is totally illegal for you to have because you're a convicted felon anyway, a lot of district attorneys are just saying, you know, this is going to make your life hard, so we're not going to actually prosecute you for this.
But they would totally charge me.
I was going to say, I guarantee you.
In a heartbeat.
If you had an illegal AR, if you did something that even made, if you had an SB, let's do this. If you had an SBR, if you had a short barrel rifle and they bagged you with that in California, even if every other firearm you had was legal, you and I both know you're going to prison. You and I both know the district attorney is going to try to send you to prison, or, you know, the county attorney or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so gang members,
justice in America,
the gang members who actually murder people, they get the pass, right? Because, you know, social justice. But the guy that wants to, you know, I'll actually tell you, this is a true story. I knew a guy in New York who had the cops come to his home, and they to be fair, they didn't arrest him, but they confiscated his double-barreled shotgun, okay? Like, his Elmer Fudd, it wasn't an over-under, I mean, it wasn't a side-by-side, but it was in an over-under. They confiscated his shotgun because he was a lawful permit holder for that long gun in New York City, who had sent in the renewal check, because you have to renew. It's not even enough to go through the process and pay, you know, $700 or whatever it is, or $500 to get the permit the first time. There's a renewal, I think it's 3 years or 5 years or something. He sent a renewal check, but it was a personal check, not a certified check. Do you think that they reached out to him to say, you know, hello, sir, like, we know you're trying to, you know, the licensing division, the NYPD? No. No, they just put it all in a drawer with his file, waited until it came up, and then they paid him a visit and they confiscated his shotgun. And they said, we could arrest you, you know, but we're not going to. They didn't do that because obviously I think people would have completely lost their mind. But that is the anti-firearms regime in a major city. That's how they actually do things.
Yeah, it's anti-firearms for normal people, pro-firearms for, you know, preferred Democrat constituencies. The one of the biggest problems in our country right now is the two-tiered system of law, the two-tiered system of everything. You saw it recently with Silicon Valley Bank. Do you think a bank that somebody else pointed out, it was brilliant, a bank catering, a regional bank in Texas catering to the oil wildcatter industry would get a Sunday night pass on the FDIC limits? Oh, I don't think so. A Democrat connected one in California? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can. Here you go. Here's free money.
It's true. I mean, the system, the ways in which the system are rigged are so multifaceted, but also so brazen at this point that I think when people look into it, it can be overwhelming. I want to bring this back to California, though, in a second, as you're a Californian conservative. And I think that's fascinating because of what's happening in your state. We'll get to that in a second. But I also want to make sure that whether it's Kurt or anybody else out there, they're getting a great night's sleep. So we got to get you the Giza Dream sheets, Kurt. They're amazing. Lowest price ever. The sheets are coming in as low as $29.99 with promo code BUCK. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty. Now for this this current promo, they're extending their 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can get money-back guaranteed. All you have to do is go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special Square, check out this flash sale on the Giza Dream Sheets, along with other limited-time offers. Enter promo code BUCK. For these limited time specials, $29.99. Giza Dream sheets are amazing. I have multiple pairs at home. The wife loves them. I love them. They're super soft. They're nice. They're great. Best sheets you'll ever own. So go check them out. All right. California. Have you reached the tipping point? I mean, have you reached a sort of terminal velocity of crazy such that now even, because this is what I always tell people. I say, you have to remember, Democrat cities, because they think that, first of all, the suffering of their stupid policies is mostly going to be confined to other people who are not important to them, right? So that's step one. And then there's another step, though, and this is more places I think you see like Portland, Seattle, but similar, where they believe that the suffering of their dumbass policies is a necessary almost purification process to get to that better place. So it's like, okay, we have more shootings, but we have more social and racial justice in this city now, don't we? You know, okay, we have a whole lot more, you know, street crime and people are overdosing on fentanyl left and right, but it's a less class-based system than it would otherwise be, you know, stuff like that. But eventually, even the Nancy Pelosi libs are like, I don't want, you know, lunatics, well, I mean, half-naked lunatic attacking her husband with a hammer, for example, right? I mean, you know. Stuff like that.
Well, look, you're not good. While we have had some crime around here, look, I live in a rich liberal area. You think our cops are going to let hobos tromp up and down our streets? Of course they're not. The suffering in California is to the people who aren't connected, who aren't approved, who aren't loved. For the rest of us, it's fairly comfortable. I mean, there's annoying things that happen. But otherwise, it's, you know, if you're, look, I'm a lawyer in a blue state. This state was literally made for me. So it's not that bad. Certainly some personal things. There's family here that I want to stay near. And I at some point, I can definitely see myself moving to the free state of Florida. I a lot of the nonsense is exhausting. The taxes are exhausting. The idiotic policies are exhausting. at some point you just want to breathe free. But I'm not quite ready to leave yet. I don't particularly like the idea of retreating. I don't know if California can be turned around. It'd certainly be a hard fight. But, you know, people are doing it. We're registering more and more conservatives out here. I know Rick Grinnell's group's registering 10,000 a month. And I think, you know, I think a lot of regular folks are getting sick of the nonsense.
We just
and hopefully they'll stop voting for idiots like Governor Hairstyle.
I think you need to get some really desirable part of the state and make it the red stronghold, and then kind of the ink blot of red
can
grow out from there.
Orange County.
Or I was going to say, I know it used to be Orange County, but you guys need to get you need to get that back. Because I think that can have a really profound effect. I mean, even just, for example, I'm in Miami now, and the fact that it was, I mean, it went, you know, more than 50-50 for DeSantis, but the difference in quality of life and policies, even in a 50-50 city, right? So a 50-50 city. So what I mean here is, like, can we get San Diego to be 50-50 Republican and the rest? Because it keeps a check on the crazy. In New York, in D.C., in San Francisco, it's 90-10. It's literally 90-10 in those cities now. Yeah. In D.C., it's more like 97-3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just want D.C. to fester in its own sewage. It's, boiling your own filth. Look, I mean, everything that the Blues touch turns to garbage. And I think normal people are seeing that. I think, I think next year is going to be a very good year for Republicans if we don't blow it. I think, you know, and I wrote a town hall column, mm-hmm. has to do with Ukraine and Ron DeSantis. I think that the Republicans are going to nominate either DeSantis or Trump. It's one or the other. I don't think anybody else has a chance. But they're effectively, by next year, the Republicans are going to have the anti-war candidate. The Democrats are not going to have any choice but be essentially the pro-war candidate. And I think by, another 18 months, I think the American people are going to be firmly in the anti-Ukrainian war camp.
So let me ask you
because
this.
Because I don't see anything good happening there.
This is perfect. It's almost like a
I see it static right now. I don't see the Ukrainians being able to build up the combat power to break the stalemate. I do see Russian history tells me that Russians come back from initial defeats. I think the Russians have the capacity to build up combat power. So I think a best case is a static war, which we're funding, and I think people will be sick of it. A worst case would be a Ukrainian collapse in the face of a Russian offensive with America intervening to try and shore them up.
So this is perfect.
And I don't think the American people are going to be there. And the Republicans are probably
Can you hear
going
me?
Because
you keep talking. Hold on a second. Hold on. I got to ask you something. What should the position of the Republican Party be on Ukraine right now? Because we're asking questions. We're raising concerns. We're saying a lot of money is going to this. But I never hear really. I mean, if I'm being totally frank about this, and you and I are two guys who are frank. I mean, you're Kurt, I'm Buck, but we're being frank here. And they never say, well, should we just what would a DeSantis or a Trump administration, if they were in charge now, which I know they can't be, but what would they want the policy to be? Is it set limits to the funding? Is it set limits to the aid, or is it, this is not our problem, not our fight. Zelensky's funding under a Republican administration, assuming this war is still going on, goes down to basically zero, at least for combat operations. Should that be the policy? What should the policy be?
Well, look, we have to have a strategy which requires objectives, and we haven't talked about any of that, because the minute somebody responds to the reactive tactics, because all we've seen are tactics. We haven't seen any strategy. Suddenly you love Putin. And I love being told I love Putin by a guy who was never in the Cold War, who actually went out and marched for the KGB's nuclear freeze, telling me, you know, you love Putin. I literally trained Ukrainian soldiers. There were Ukrainian soldiers in our battalion in Kosovo, our brigade in Kosovo. I like the Ukrainians. I support them. I would like them to win. They're patriots. I understand why they're doing what they want to do, but I'm an American patriot, and my interest is my country. Our strategic interest as America right now is not Ukraine. It is to preserve American supremacy and make sure the Chinese don't supplant us. What would support that? That is the strategy. A strategy, a smart one, would be to get Russia back in the Western fold. I have long said that the greatest American foreign policy mistake of the last three decades was not Iraq or Afghanistan, but the failure to bring Russia into the West after the fall of the Soviet Union. It got botched, and then suddenly in the last 8 years, it's been like politically useful domestically to hate Russia. You don't have to like Russia. You just need Russia to be on our side against China. So that should be our strategy. And starting that process, and it will be a process, means making peace in Ukraine. Now, Ukrainians won't like it because they'll have to give up territory. Putin won't like it because he's not going to get everything he wants. But I think our strategy, you know, to support our strategy, we should make peace, force peace down these guys' throats, because it's not American interest for this war to continue. I know it's not just. I know it will recognize an aggressor will get some reward out of it, but I'm an American. I care about the United States of America. That's my priority. And that's what supports a meaningful objective, which is much bigger than Ukraine.
Kurt, we got to let you get to your delicious pizza. I can almost smell it, even though I guess it's technically a few thousand miles away. Your books, though, where should people go? Amazon, which one is the latest one? Let's sell some books here.
Go to Amazon, get Inferno, but get People's Republic, the first one. You'll like it. It's fun. You'll want to read all seven. I have sold a bunch of these. Conservatives are begging for material. And boy, if only we could convince one of the studios to make it, but it's a little un-PC. It's a little not politically correct. That'd be a real hard pill for them to swallow, but they make great movies. They're a lot of fun.
Good to me. I'm gonna go get a copy. Kurt Schlichter, everybody, also look for him on townhall.com. Kurt, always a pleasure, sir. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.